Hi there, everybody. Welcome to The Principal Entrepreneur. I'm your host and author of the book, How to Be a Great Principal, Jonathan Royce. Welcome to episode 102 of The Principal Entrepreneur, where we support educational leaders with strategies and suggestions that answer the question, how do I also interview principals and school and educational leaders just like me and you and discuss their areas of expertise and how they overcome the challenges within schools. In today's episode, we're talking with Mrs. Donita Townsell. Mrs. Townsell has been an educator for 31 years. She spent about half that time as a middle and high school level science teacher and the other half as a lead counselor. In that role, she worked hand in hand with the principal, positively impacting school culture and Along with Dr. Selena Thetford, she is the co-author of The Ultimate Survival Toolkit for High School Students and Their Parents, a step-by-step guide to navigate the college and career application. We'll get into some of the great advice and strategies in her book in just a few minutes, but before we do so, we'll get into her Mrs. Town.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I appreciate it. I just wanted to dive right in here. But I want to get into your educational journey and what inspired you to become an educator.
Well, I was a biology major at Talladega College in Talladega, Alabama. And my grades weren't up to par for med school, which I had intended. I had intended to be a doctor, but, you know, I did a little too much partying to pass the MCAT. So I graduated school, and I figured I would probably work at a lab. And I found out that there was a huge science teacher shortage in the nation. And at that time, I married, and the next month, I moved to Dade County, which is Miami, and they had a huge science teacher shortage. And I was actually hired on a provisional certificate. And I really didn't want to be in a lab because I'm more of a people person.
Right.
And you know, teaching, I said, well, let me give this a try. I can impact people that way. So that is how I actually got into education.
So what was your education like as a student before you got to college? What was that like?
Before I got to college?
Before you got to college.
I think I had a pretty great education in the Atlanta public school system. You know, I know they have a bad rap now, but the Atlanta public school system was quite different then. I actually graduated from high school in 1980, and I had very good teachers, mostly African-American teachers. We lived in a small, close-knit, blue-collar community where most of my friends had dads in the home. I think I only had one friend whose parents were divorced.
Right.
So we had a very close-knit community. The teachers exposed us to African-American history and the arts. It was just a wonderful way to grow up then. So, you know, things are a little bit different now. I wish we could kind of return to those type things.
Right. And so from there, what made you decide to get into the sciences?
Well, I always liked science, and I had good grades in science. I was always curious about things. And I believe a doctor had interested me in the medical field. So I said, well, maybe I can do this. And initially I thought about being an engineer, but the math kind of turned me off.
Right.
So I was always good in the biological sciences, and that is how I decided to become a biology major.
Okay. So from there, you got into a lab. Based on your personality type, you prefer to be around people, and that the teacher shortage, you noticed that was going on, and you decided to get into teaching.
Yes, and I had some success at Talladega. I think we were one of the few schools as a biology major we biology majors had to do a thesis paper and defend it. And there was a point where I had to defend a concept for the panel of professors, and I actually taught a concept and liked it. The success, you know, after the professor challenged me, and I went to the board and diagrammed this thing out, and almost got a standing ovation from the audience. I'm like, well, maybe I can teach, and you know, right. I guess that's how I got. Initially got the teaching bug.
So that's what I was looking for. I was looking for that moment where that switch kind of came on, and you're like, oh, maybe teaching is the thing. So it sounds like teaching that lesson for a class that didn't have anything to do with education was kind of the trigger.
Oh yes, definitely, most definitely. It's something I always remember.
So from there. You became a science teacher. You were a science teacher for 14 years, maybe?
Yes, I was a science teacher for 14 years. Started off in the Miami Public, in the Dade County school system, which is contains Miami. Started off in a pretty rough neighborhood, Liberty City. And I believe it's probably about 95% of the children were on free or reduced lunch. So, you know, and I was sort of thrown in, you know, with a peer teacher. And, you know, that wasn't a good experience, but I was determined to become a good teacher, you know, despite my mentoring that I got at that time.
So the school wasn't a bad experience. It was the team teaching that was a bad experience?
Right, the mentor teacher, you know, it wasn't a good experience for me.
Okay.
But I got through that because I wanted to be a good teacher, so I had to reach beyond the mentor teacher.
Right.
To get mentored.
So how did you go about doing that?
Well, I kind of thought back to what the science classes that I had enjoyed and what those teachers did. And I also actually went to some other content area teachers to sort of shadow them and see what they were doing. And I always wanted to make science hands-on, so I cleaned out this lab stock room that hadn't been cleaned out in years.
Right.
And I started doing labs with the students. And, you know, after that, my love of teaching just grew. And other students wanted to be in my class, and I was a rookie teacher.
Right, right.
Yeah.
How did you end up in that particular neighborhood school?
Well, like I say, there was a shortage. And my husband at the time had relatives in the school system, and they had a contact. I went in to interview, and you know, I was sort of hired on the spot because it was slim pickings, I guess, because there was a nationwide shortage of science teachers, and they snapped me up, and we had 3 years to get coursework in education during those 3 years for full certification.
Right, right. I feel like mm-hmm. not much has changed in terms of the sciences and the math. There are very, very few, and those that you finally do get to interview, you got to just often decide how do you, or you see the weaknesses, and you just got to decide, can I work with those weaknesses and build capacity in those areas?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think I would have survived had I not had the thirst to become a good teacher, because I could have easily quit. You know, there were some days, I went home crying. You know, my mentor teacher, when I asked for help, she just told me, she rolled over this cart of dictionaries and told me to have the kids to find dictionaries and do word search for them. And I'm like, nah, that's
not going to work.
That's not going to work.
Right. So you were a science teacher. How did you get to the counselor position?
Well, I was thinking about this the other night, and I guess I guess I'm an empath, so I always had empathy for the students. And even that first year of teaching, you know, I was 23, working at a junior high school. Most of the kids were larger than I was at that time. A young lady in the seventh grade confided in me that she was pregnant. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, why not tell the counselor? She's like, well, I don't want to tell the counselor. So, of course, I had to tell the counselor. So I guess something in my personality made students confide in me a lot, you know, and that's what has happened over the years. You know, I had one young man, and, you know, this was when I started teaching down there. It was right after the Cuban boat lift in Miami, so there were a lot of Cubans in my class also, and it was this one, brilliant young man who actually contacted me some 20 years later. He found me 20 years later and told me I was the reason why he majored in science in college, and it just, you know, kind of blew me away. You know, he was one of the teachers used to call him my little Cuban son.
Right.
So. Yeah,
that's why we do what we do, for those rare moments when somebody decides to come back and tell them how much you meant to them.
Yeah, that just blew me away that day. Yeah.
So you were a counselor for a long time. What was one of your greatest challenges in working with your principals during that time?
I guess getting principals to see or be knowledgeable about what counselors actually do, because a lot of times principals will want to put you in an administrative role in the schoolhouse. And getting a principal to know that we cannot blur the lines, you know, with us being an administrator. I think one of my last positions as a middle school counselor, the principal had me go into the in-school suspension room for 30 minutes just to give the in-house in-school suspension person a lunch break. So it wasn't like I was going in there to do a program, although I tried to do programs and talk with the students. But at times when you have that many students in the room for discipline infractions, sometimes I would have to discipline. And that blurs the line. That stops students from being open with you. That could actually, you know, they could know something that will affect school safety. But because I've been in this role as a disciplinarian at times in that in-school suspension room, you know, that was a problem. So just getting principals to know that our time is precious, just like principal's time is, but it's hard when you put counselors in administrative roles. Students get confused, and, you know, it just doesn't lend for transparency, you know, from the students.
Right, right. So how did, when those situations come up, how did you go about talking with the principal and letting him know that wasn't the particular place for you, especially if you know, everybody, you know, is also kind of chipping in at that particular position, or, you know, you have other staff members doing that, and then you're the one that's not. How do you navigate the team aspect of that?
Well, I try to explain that to everyone. You know, I try to explain to the principal, and I see what you're getting at. Everybody has that role, but there were other people who could have taken that role in that in-school suspension room. I wasn't the only one. The entire counseling team had to rotate in. And it just was not a good look for counselors and students because, like I said, we had to discipline the kids.
Right.
And, you know, you saw kids later on in the hall who didn't want to talk to you because you had been in there they had seen you, maybe you didn't discipline them, but they had seen you discipline some other kids.
Right, right.
So, you know, there were other people who could have done that role. I did not mind. I did hall duty when I worked in the middle school. I did not mind that. I liked talking with the students in the morning. I liked greeting them. I could see students maybe in a bad mood when they came in, and I would make sure I checked in with them during the day. So I liked that part of it, but just, you know, getting us to do those, that discipline role and some of the administrative tasks, I did not, you know, enjoy, because it is, you were blurring lines at that point.
Right, right. So what is, if you were going to, so you didn't like doing, when you say administrative piece, you're talking about the discipline piece, right?
Discipline and at the high school level, when I started, as a high school counselor, the registrars in the building, when we had new students come in from wherever, the registrars would encode the transcript. You know, we would tell the registrar, okay, this class is this. I would analyze the or evaluate the transcript, give it to the registrar, and they did the data entry. Well, something happened in our county, and the registrars as a whole sued the county.
Huh.
So we were then charged with that task of not only evaluating, but encoding,
wow,
or transcribing the transcript.
Right, right.
It's sometimes if a kid came in as a junior or senior, it took an hour and a half to do.
Right.
Because, you know, that's not my skill set.
Right, right.
So that took away from us actually doing face-to-face counseling. But, you know, I even tried to, when I was a lead counselor, I devised a system where everybody would have like an administrative day where you just did all your paperwork, because that's the only way we kind of figured out a way to make it manageable.
Right.
So, yeah, that was hard. I don't miss that.
Right. So how did those lessons learned in that position as counselor lead to the creation of the book?
Well, as the lead counselor, you know, I required my counselors and myself, because we were organized by alphabet. So I required all of them to conduct a one-hour face-to-face individual conference with juniors and seniors and their parents. And it basically would take about a month to get all of your juniors to get one grade level done. Well, you know, it was an extensive process. And I would also do two or three junior and senior parent nights. But invariably, we would get people coming back wanting us to repeat the information, because it is a lot of information.
Yes.
And we would give them a nice little handbook that we had compiled, but they still wanted more. They wanted to tell me about what did you say about that? Well, I didn't come to this, to the financial aid night. I explained this a little bit more. So I decided that, and my co-author, at a certain point, her office, the assistant principal of instruction's office, was connected to the counseling suite. And she saw the amount of just the sheer volume of work that we did. And the counseling office was like the heartbeat of the school.
Right.
We had more visitors daily than anybody did. So she saw what we did. And this pal, and she, her four kids came through the school, so we worked with her four kids also, and she saw that we were doing our best, but, you know, we thought that parents needed more. You know, most of our kids were first-generation college students, and even if they weren't, things had changed since their parents had gone to college, so and it's an ever-changing process right now, so it could be very long and confusing. So we just compiled all this information in a book, in a step. It's a step-by-step guide to the college entry and career-ready process.
That, I think, is a great service, just because this learning this year and taking this is my first year as a principal, and one of the things that we did was we took our students to the local community college, just trying to figure out that system. As someone who's college educated and jumped through the hoops, it's not an easy thing going from senior to incoming college freshman. So it sounds like the book has a great deal of information that families can use.
Yeah, it's not. And that's why at the end of the book, we included a section called Get Your Mind Right, Developing the Post-Secondary Mindset. Because, you know, students have just been promoted from school to school thus far. And it's a different mindset for college. So, we included that also. I think that's the mindset is what can impact whether schools, whether students are retained or drop out in college.
So, who would you say this this book would? Who do you think the ideal audience is for this book?
Well, the ideal audience is for high schools, but in particular, juniors and seniors right now. Actually, you know, if seniors are just starting now getting things together, they're starting late. But the book will certainly help them navigate the process faster because, you know, there's so many steps and things that you have to do, so many checklists that have to be taken care of in a timely manner. And, you know, a lot of the students aren't used to hard deadlines. And we have to tell them, you know, colleges have hard deadlines, and you have to explain what a hard deadline means.
Right.
Yeah.
What is one of your most favorite, or you think most impactful?
The most impactful section, I would say, not only the mindset section, but the communications section, and it's called Can We Talk, and it's communication. Students need to know that they must communicate in a professional manner when applying to college and applying for a job. So we talk about email etiquette, social media etiquette, written communication skills, and we talk about networking. And you'd be surprised, you know, a lot of our students now, they are what we call cyber natives, and a lot of them really don't talk to each other.
Right.
And they get so flustered when they have to speak in front of groups or introduce themselves to people. So we wanted to include networking in that communications chapter.
Right. I think those soft skills are or continually need to be reinforced.
Right. Our goal is actually to turn the book into a curriculum because really juniors and seniors need to do this work in the schoolhouse because they have so many distractions. Once they leave the school building, they just don't have time to get or they don't have their priorities in order to get all the things done for the college application process or the career interview process. There's a section in the book about dressing for success. So, you know, we hopefully, and I know we're going to develop a curriculum.
Right. So if you were going to give one piece of advice to new principals who are working with counselors or one piece of advice from your book, what would it be?
For new counselors and principals, I would say, you know, you all are a team. Counselors and principals are a team. if the counselor is able to implement a curriculum of social and emotional lessons and college and career ready lessons, that could impact school culture and the bottom line student achievement. And I believe that counselors and principals just need to know that they're a team. You know, I was always included, thank goodness, on the leadership team. Whenever the principals and assistant principals met with the department chairs, I was always invited to the table and I had input. And I think that's the best case scenario.
Right. So what's, if would that be the best way that a principal could can support the counselor, is to have them be part of that leadership team?
Of course, of course. You know, then you have buy-in, you know. At a certain point, one of my principals didn't invite me in, but he quickly saw that. You know, you're going to have to talk to the counselors, you know.
Right. You can't get anything done without the counselors. I've already learned that.
Right. You can, because counselors, and you know, you impact the schedule. You know,
right.
It's like I said, it's like the heart of the school building. At least it was wherever I worked. So if you can get everybody at the table, you get that buy-in when you bring in the leadership, you know, the counselor in the leadership meetings.
Right. Last two questions. First one, what are two books that have had an impact on you professionally?
Okay, well, my first book that had an impact on me professionally, I was still in the classroom, is Jesus CEO by Laurie Beth Jones. The subtitle is Using Ancient Wisdom for Visionary Leadership. It's an easy read, and it just talks about the strength of action. It has three components: the strength of action, strength of self-mastery, and the strength of relationships. And one of the things that stood out most for me was, you know, Jesus had a team, and a lot of people don't think of it like that, but he could not do it all himself. He had the disciples, so he had a team.
Right.
So people have to have a team. And the second, and he empowered his team, and he celebrated with them. The second book that had the major impact was The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by John Maxwell. And, you know, in his book, he says that your leadership is like a lid on an organization. So the organization cannot reach any farther than that leadership lid, but the lid can be increased.
Right.
And of course, the way to do that is involve others and empower other people in the organization. So those were my two books that have most impacted me.
All right. Last questions. If members of the audience want to reach out to you, learn more about you and your co-author and your book, The Ultimate Survival Guide for High School Students and Their Parents, where can they do that?
Okay. The website will soon be up, like within the next week. They can go to www.ultimatetoolkit.net. That's www.ultimatetoolkit.net. That's it.
UltimateToolkit.net. And if they want to reach out to you, how can they do that?
They can reach out to me at BNT Whitlock, that's WHITLOCK, at gmail.com.
All right, Mrs. Townsville, thanks so much for your time, and I look forward to chatting with you again.
Yes, I hope I added some value to your audience.
And that was Mrs. Danita Townsville. Two takeaways for me in that conversation was the idea that having counselors do discipline duty can negatively impact students. And make sure to include the counselor on the leadership team. One tweetable quote that stood out was, "I was determined to become a great teacher despite the mentoring I got." And the reason for that is because it describes that inner passion to change lives that all great educators have. Her words of wisdom that really struck me was the idea of Jesus having a team and that he couldn't do it all himself. And I hadn't ever really thought of this, of the disciples in that particular context of the team. Again, the two books that she recommended were Jesus CEO by Lori Beth Jones and The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by John Maxwell. If you found this entertaining, educational, or cause for reflection, please follow me and share with your friends. For more short articles and tips that support educational leaders, check out my blog at howtobeagreatprincipal.com, where you can order my newest book, How to Be a Great Principal, 36 Shared Leadership Success Strategies. You can also get a monthly email that delivers the most valuable blogs as voted by readers by joining the Principal's Prep Minute. You can register right on the website. If you're an auditory learner, you are in the exact right spot, and you can download my podcast, The Principal Entrepreneur, on iTunes and Podomatic. New episodes come out weekly, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, as long as I am lucky enough to get an educational leader like Miss Danita Townsell. If you're interested in sharing your own experiences as an ed leader, please email me at jonathanroyce@theprincipalentrepreneur.com. Finally, I'm part of a community of supportive principals. Please join our private Facebook group. Go to Facebook, type in The Principal Entrepreneur, and our private Facebook group will pop up, and I will be happy to add you to the group. And that is it for this episode of The Principal Entrepreneur.